Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is November 16th, 2016. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. Thank you for joining us. As you know, Wednesdays we do interviews, and today I'm really excited to have Dave Parrish, citizen journalist who's done some excellent work in helping get the Fukushima awareness process going on. So I want to introduce you, Dave, right away. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lonnie. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Dave has a weekly podcast that he does. And what time is your podcast, Dave, every week?
Yeah, we have that come out every Friday afternoon. It's called the Fuku Friday Happy Hour Hangout. It's live on Periscope, and then we have a rebroadcast that's archived on YouTube.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Dave also was very instrumental in creating a documentary called 311 Surviving Japan, which I saw several years ago. Awesome. I mean, could you have believed, Dave, that we actually would be here talking several years later? I actually, myself, when I saw it, I thought those that documentary and the several others that I watched would have moved scientists to action. But they just...
Yeah, I agree, Lonnie. I thought that we were going to have a lot more progress than we've had by now. But, you know, Kevin Blanch, you know, called it right. You know, we're at the point now where people are just starting to see how bad things really are at Fukushima because of the cover-up, because of everything that's happened since then. And, you know, we have a long, long, long way to go with the Fukushima Daiichi nightmare. So,
yeah, that's really sad. And they're actually talking about starting a third nuclear power plant in Japan right now. So
they talk about that, you know, talking and doing are two different things.
True. So we'll see what they say. Also, I wanted to give people your website, which is OperationSaveTheEarth.com.
Yep, so, it's a great place for you to get started. If you're just finding out about Fukushima today, this is your first time, you know, really coming to grips with the scope of the disaster itself and how this ongoing crisis almost six full years later is impacting you, it's a good place to get started. You know, we have some good, you know, current information there. It has the most comprehensive link section in the entire anti-nuclear movement. Go find a better one online if you can, but I doubt that. And, you know, like I said, it's a really good jumping off point if you're, like, just, you know, coming into this.
True. And I will say this to you, Dave, because I'm funny about words, but I personally refuse to call myself an anti-nuker. I'm calling myself a nuke truther, because the anti-anything is a negative connotation. I think that has a lot to do with why we've gotten nowhere, because we're stuck in the negatives. You know what I mean? We need to put ourselves on the positive side.
I understand that.
So I call ourselves nuke truthers. But this is the thing. I mean, it is beyond comprehension what has happened and is going on. I mean, I've noticed recently at the Fukushima Daiichi, they usually have had, for the last 6 years, in fact, they have had a news feed up on YouTube, which has abruptly ended in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So something must be going on there that they really do not want us to see. There's something.
Of course not.
Something's happened.
I think, you know, with the removal of the panels and everything at Reactor 1, you know, I think people are just forgetting, you know, that, hey, guess what? Reactor 1 had a cover over it for almost 5 full years for a reason.
Right.
Okay, because it's way too radioactive at Reactor 1 for people to, you know, just, you know, hang out there, right? So if that covering is gone, that means what? The radiation is going into the atmosphere again, right?
At unprecedented amounts. It was still absorbing out, but nothing like it is now.
Right. See, so, you know, that means we're having a more activity with the radiation spilling into the atmosphere now, and that takes place every day, as a matter of course, at Reactor 3, right? So, you know, now we have Reactor 1 uncovered, too, and it's like, gee, how come I'm seeing spikes across the board here in the United States for radiation readings here lately?
Right.
The last several months have been really, really, really hot. And I remember after the Fukushima nuclear disaster first began back in March of 2011, that's when we first started seeing those numbers start to creep up, right, on a consistent basis. And now it's just, I look at the map and I'm like, yeesh, red all over the United States. It's like, well, it can't just be from local reactors. It can't just be from, you know, fracking incidents or something like that. No, it has to be from a larger source. And, you know, to me, it's like I've been saying the whole time, Lonnie, you know, when it comes to the real problems that the world faces, there's the situation in Fukushima Daiichi, and then there's just everything else.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly the way. I mean, I have to say, we talked about this a little bit right before we got on the air. I saw you yesterday at the actions. There was hundreds of thousands of people out in the street yesterday.
Yeah, it was very encouraging to see, you know, the unity that took place yesterday at the event I went to here in Phoenix to stand in support with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and everyone who's working hard in the camps up there in North Dakota. You know, there was just a lot of peace and love in the air in the streets yesterday, and it was just great, you know, hanging out with all these like-minded people, not getting harassed by the cops, none of that. You know, it was just about getting our message across and letting everybody know that, hey, you know what, you can't drink oil. Okay, you can drink water, but, you know, you have to protect it so that it doesn't get polluted, so that it doesn't, you know, cause all type of genetic damage later down the road. Because, you know, we got to protect the water now for the kids that are coming up as we come along here. You know, future generations are going to look at us right now and judge us right now by our actions and our deeds. So we have got to put our best foot forward together, or else, you know, I don't know about you, Lonnie, but I don't want to have grandkids coming up to me later saying, geez, Grandpa, why didn't you try harder?
Well, that's, geez, in fact, Grandma, exactly why I do this. I mean, it's not that I don't even want my grandkids. I'm doing it. In fact, my daughter thinks I'm ridiculous because I devote myself to this issue in my spare time, which I, you know, I'm going to school and work full time. So there's not much of me left. And she's like, Mom, you know, really, you should slow down because you're just, you know, maybe it's too much on you. And I'm like, look, I feel like my family's being attacked, literally.
Mm.
They are literally being attacked.
Yep.
And I just don't think that it is, I think it's my responsibility to stay engaged, period, no matter what.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone says family first, but what are you really doing?
Right.
You know, I think your daughter is going to see down the road as she gets older, it's like, hey, you know what? All that crazy stuff that Mom was working on, that is, I'm really starting to see that now, the fruition of that. So,
well,
you know,
as people get
sick, it's
just
take like, time.
When we start seeing family members or children or younger family members, the ones that are below 30 having heart attacks or getting cancer, really that is what is going to happen in the next 5 years. We've had 6 years going on, so we know for a fact that latency period is about 10 to 15 years, period.
Right.
So we've got 6 years under our belt. We've got 4 years left. The time is ticking.
Oh, yeah.
And
why do you think the the World Health Organization put out a report a couple years ago saying that we were going to see a 70% increase in cancer rates over the next 50 years.
Wow.
I'm like, 70%?
Wow.
I mean, that's a crazy number, right? See, where's that coming from? Of course, they don't mention the F word because it's verboten to do that. You can't do that. But we all know, right, that, you know, where does a lot of this cancer stuff come from? Where does a lot of these heart disease things come from? It comes from nuclear, right? You know, you'll write it off and say, oh, it could be this or it could be that or it could be this. But you know what? You know, so-called experts out there, it sure as heck could be Fukushima too, couldn't it? All right, so for them to just flat out discount that and say, no, it cannot be, well, that's just bad science.
Well, it's not just bad science, it's immoral science. I mean, what was his name? His name is Kevin Foster, I think he is from the UK. I think that's his last name. He basically said he's a nuke truther, and he said that when scientists deny the negative effects or when they make weapons of mass destruction using nuclear, that they really move from being scientists to genociders. And that's really what's happening here. These people are genociders because they have the knowledge. I mean, I got into quite a big discussion with a man, a nuclear health physicist who basically defended the nuclear industry. And he convinced me that the chemical pollution that we are doing to our planet is far worse immediately, the immediate effect, because this was his point. They have... In order to make the nuclear, you have to add all these chemicals. And the way they process the chemicals and manage it and deal with it is far more immediately disastrous to the environment and just as long. Like in my own little area of my hometown, Redondo Beach, after that discussion, I discovered that there was a company dumping massive amounts of chemicals right next to Redondo Beach, where I live, where I'm from. That's why that's what made me leave there. I got so sick every time I went into the ocean or even walked on the ocean. I decided this can't be well. I didn't relate it to chemical pollution. I thought it was in Redondo Beach. They were telling us it was the sewage plant letting out sewage, but it wasn't, as it turns out. This is what I mean: the complicity, the stories. The governments are willing to just tell us whatever story, whatever we kind of like this is what I call the Donald Trump syndrome now. Well, we'll just tell you whatever you want to hear, and then we go ahead and do whatever we're going to do. I mean, it's like the DAPL. You know, Donald Trump is a major investor in the DAPL. That thing's getting built. It's going to get built.
That's one thing I don't quite understand about President-elect Trump's stance on certain things. It's like, isn't there a conflict of interest for him, personally, with some of the things that are already out there, some of the projects that are already out there? I mean, as president-elect and somebody who is supposed to, who said that he wants to represent all Americans, you know, well, how can you represent all Americans if you're also representing your own personal and financial interests?
Well, don't ask me, Dave. I mean, look, this is the thing. The idea of drain the swamp, and all of his cabinet members are from Wall Street and lobbyists. And Americans are going to get a full flavor of what they've done to themselves with this guy.
Lonnie, I mean, how can President-elect Trump say that he's going to drain the swamp, and then guess what shows up? The Legion of Doom. I'm like, what is this?
The Legion of Doom.
That's where Legion of Doom lives. They live in the swamp. That's what happens when you drain it. We got Lex Luthor over here.
Let's be fair.
Over there. I'm like, come on, man.
Dave, he's draining the swamp, and he's going to give him fresh water.
If the Legion of Doom is there, then what do we got to do? We got to form the Justice League. We got to get the Super Friends in on this, right?
Yeah,
you know,
that is the thing.
That was kind of my point yesterday, you know, when we were all out there standing in unity against the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, we're the superheroes. We're the ones who were, you know, standing against the forces of evil, right? So what do we have to do? We just have to stand strong and together. Right. We just have to keep spreading love and do the things that we do every single day.
Right.
So, you know, let the Legion of Doom show up. All right. We have the fight and we have the fighters ready.
We have the numbers.
We match them. So,
I mean, this is the issue. We do have the numbers. When people really realize how seriously bad things are. This is the issue about the nuclear thing. People listen to our radio shows that discuss this, and there's only a handful of shows that really do discuss this. And when people hear about it, it takes a little while for people to figure out a way to get active. It's kind of like Thomas Ackerman's always talking about, you have to act your conscience. Well, part of that is self-love. Like, you, unless you really love yourself, you can't figure out what your conscience is telling you because you're completely self-conscious. You can't figure out what you're supposed to do. So I move from a place of self-love. Like, we need to learn to really be kind to ourselves and love ourselves so that we find the courage to actually get active. So we can find a way to respond to that inner voice inside ourselves that says, it really is important if I do go out and stand out in the street. Because it is important for us to stand out in the street. I think that's a powerful – people have said to me many times, oh, it doesn't matter. People can go out in the street. Nothing's going to happen. But it does – it does – it is a – I mean, like, as I said to you just now – Donald Trump's a major investor in the DAPL. It'll be really curious to see how the several hundred thousand people in the street yesterday will really affect this plan for the DAPL, because they could actually really stop it and reroute it and do a whole different thing.
Sure. The Army Corps of Engineers already has said, you know, that there's a lot of things wrong with this setup right now, and that energy partners, they need to, you know, rethink this. And, you know, as long as the money keeps flowing, Lonnie, you know, that's really the trick right there. So what I'm trying to get everyone to understand a little bit more is that we vote with our dollars more than we vote with the pen at the polling station, right? Because who listens to sales reports? Who listens to those kinds of figures? The money people, right? Investors do, shareholders do, right? So if you find out that your bank is investing in pipelines, is investing in things that you don't like, what do? You take your money out of that bank and you put it someplace else. You drain that resource from them, and believe me, that has a lot of power. Now, when it comes to people marching in the streets, listen, you know, go back and check your history, folks. People in the streets, that usually is going to get some kind of results. It's going to be a compromise on the other side, or they're going to, you know, come at you, or whatever. There's going to be a reaction, right? So anybody who says, you know, oh, you know, showing up is not going to make a difference, well, guess what? You know, you're just historically inaccurate. Okay, so.
Historic. Well, if nobody showed up, we wouldn't have the United States of America, which, frankly, our revolution was only fought with, like, what, 25-30% of the people.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like there was everybody was on board with breaking away from England. You know what I mean? That's the thing. The historical context is super important for people to understand, that it wasn't everybody involved in it. Nobody, most of those people didn't want to. They didn't want to rock their cart either. You know what I mean? Just like now.
Sure.
That's why these few people that listen to this radio show, this radio station, which frankly. Hats off to Jules, because this is the one station where we have my show, the Age of Fission, Nuclear Hot Seat, and now we have MAPS, which is the Missouri Accountability Project.
Great.
Which really is highlights what the ongoing nuclear disaster in St. Louis, which I'm really grateful, because they really needed their own show. If it's on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., and yeah. It is, I don't know if you've listened to it, but, you know, Drew Kuhn runs it, and his show is astounding with the information that he's bringing.
That is so awesome. I have had contact with some of the moms over in the Westlake landfill area, and what they've been accomplishing here, I think it's amazing, and I think we need more voices. You know, I know that, you know, like we were talking about before the show started, now is the time for everyone to get active in whatever it is that, you know, is your passion. Now, I know there's some people out there who are still upset about what happened last week and everything, but hey, this just in, folks, this isn't the first time we've had a cracker in the White House, okay? You know, can we go back to, you know, can we go back to Harry S. Truman, who, you know, who was basically a political knave, and after Roosevelt died, you know, he, it was him, his show to run. And once he, you know, went in the Situation Room and said, what's the biggest stick you have on the table? Oh, it's this nuclear bomb that we're working on. Well, let's use that as a political bargaining chip. And ever since then, we've been on this pathway to destruction with nuclearism ever since then. Now, what do we have that the people didn't have back in the late 1940s to combat somebody like a Harry S. Truman? We have the internet now.
Right.
We got social media,
exactly,
that we can plug into and connect with people all around the world instantaneously, right, and share information that is relevant. We did not have that.
Exactly. Well, that's the difference between...
That is a powerful tool. That, I mean, look at what's happened with Dakota Access. Look at what the Standing Rock Sioux have been able to do. You know, by using social media, by showing the world what is going on there with, you know, people sicking dogs on them, with, you know, getting shot at.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there just having peaceful prayer protests, trying to stop these guys, and they're getting shot at.
Well, Dave, a perfect example of how social media changes these events. Look at the very first nuclear catastrophe that happened in Los Angeles, highly populated area, right? The Santa Susana nuclear power plant blew up. The nuclear industry gave the responsibility of, do you allow it to go into the atmosphere or do we let the plant blow up, to an 18-year-old. They assigned that decision to an 18-year-old.
Sure.
Nobody in L.A., nobody knew at the time. And it has only come out because because of Fukushima happened, people like me are like, oh, my God. And one little tiny pinhole leads up to a whole open window of information.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And if each of us followed that pinhole, we could expose. I mean, this is how I came across the 90% rule. Just stunning. It's stunning, but they still do it. This is why we have scientists who are basically lying to us right now.
Yeah.
And to themselves, actually. That's the worst, is that they're lying to themselves because they so desperately want their comfortable life, their comfortable lifestyle, the good insurance so that they can deal with the cancer they know they're going to get.
Yeah. It's so true. But, you know, that's the thing, Ronnie. We're in a position now where we can turn that all around. Okay, the next generation, the kids who live on their mobile, they're going to revolutionize how we communicate with each other, how we get our energy, how we do things going forward. I mean, they're going to come up with great and amazing concepts and ideas, things that get put into practice. They're going to completely change how we do things in life in general over the next 25 years, 50 years, right? The problem is that we have got to buy them enough time to be able to do that now going forward. You know, a lot of people want to write off millennials. They want to write off this next generation, you know, for this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, no, man, that is the exact wrong way to go about it, because they wrote my generation off back when I was a kid. They said Generation X can't do nothing, right? But what did we do in the last 30 years? The hip-hop nation... technological innovation, we have been at the apex of change, right? That's what the next generation wants to do, and they have the tool in their hand, literally in their hand, to be able to do that, to be able to make that change, and to be able to make this a better world for all of us, because I know that's what they want.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so, next generation, I know you're listening. It's your ball game now, guys. Go get them. Go get them. I'll give you whatever you want. I got some great Gatorade, whatever you need, some hot towels. I will hook you up.
Well, this is the thing. I think that's what's really exciting about the... I think, I forget who told me this, but somebody said, you know, the no DAPL movement is the cataclysm that has changed the axle. It's reversing. For some reason, this has resonated with lots of people across the board, and it is on the teeter-totter of things. It's pushing it back down to where people are willing to come out into the street. People are getting it. If we do not stop these people, they literally, I mean, downstream of DAPL is 35 million people. I mean, that's a lot of people whose water to contaminate.
And what is at the heart of the genesis behind the protests, Bonnie? Do you know?
What do you mean? What did you say?
It's Native kids and women.
Right.
They're the ones that started the ball rolling.
That's right.
On this. They were like, no, we're going to draw a line in the sand on this because we cannot allow this black snake to come through our land and kill all of us because that's what it will do. They realized that. They saw the writing on the wall, and they said, no more. And by being consistent and persistent with their message, by doing the things that they have been doing at the camps ever since, that just has drawn people to them, right? Not just, you know, prominent journalists and figures, but nations all around the world. Indigenous people all around the world are waking up to not just this cause. You know, this is like the flagship cause, but there's all these other problems. There's all these other injustices that need to be addressed. And it's kind of like having this trickle-down effect where everyone's starting to see, oh, well, this problem needs to be addressed and that problem needs to be addressed and everything. It's like, yes, yes, that's right. You need to take that inspiration that, you know, struck these moms and kids about this pipeline, and you need to channel that within yourself to create amazing, powerful change.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, that's why we have a population full of billions of people, because our problems are so big, we need every single person to take action. Like, think about this. Like, if some people took on the oil industry, some the nuclear industry, some took on the lead, the uranium, like, there's the chemicals, you can't actually even do a 360. You cannot turn in any direction without seeing some way that the corporate industry, the corporate mentality, the capitalist mentality has really decimated our planet's environment, or is in the middle of completely destroying it.
Yeah. And the people, the protectors, as they're called, you know, they're the ones that are castigated. They're the ones that are, you know, thrown in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not the billionaires who, you know, say, oh, well, let's go ahead and ruin the Missouri River. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, as long as I get paid, as long as I can add a few more dollars.
And help the economy. That's the anger. Those people out there are like, I've actually had conversations. Some of my clients are, I've had a few of my clients go out and work in these fracking facilities and work out there. And they're like, look, you know, you can't stop the economy. If you do that, we're going to, and I'm like, well, we have a responsibility to think outside the box and not just let them tell us what to do. Because frankly, the fracking industry was started by Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was the person who got that thing passed before they left office. That's why they've gone hog wild on it. And this business about the oil industry is kind of sad. I mean, I have to say it's kind of sad how they end up for themselves. Like when I heard that President-elect Trump, there was words that said Ivanka was going to be the ambassador to Japan. If we hear that, I'm actually going to send him a notice and send him a thing. And I'm going to send him I'm going to tweet him. That's what I've been doing, is tweeting him. His daughter is too young to go to Fukushima, to go to Japan. I mean, we could send Carolyn Kennedy, because she's a woman over 40, 45, so she can handle the isotope level without being catastrophically affected. You send a person, a young woman, 30, 35 years old, they are going to be massively, I mean, she can't be 35 years old. She looks very young. I don't know how old she is, but she does not look young enough for us to be sending our brightest and our best to Tokyo. That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous statement. I don't think he comprehends it. Although I pondered this when I was getting ready for the show, Dave. What do you think? Do you think that our president actually understands the gravity? Do you think that he will be informed about the gravity of Fukushima?
Well, it's my understanding that he has been briefed on it, and he's meeting with Prime Minister Abe tomorrow. And I don't think that point of conversation is going to be overlooked. I don't see how it can be. But, you know, it's like I said before the election took place, Lonnie, it really doesn't matter who gets to be president next. You know, they are going to have to deal with the Fukushima nightmare in one way or the other going forward. And for President-elect Trump to say that, you know, oh, I'm just going to send my daughter and she's going to be, you know, the ambassador to Japan, that's naivete speaking right there. You know, that's saying that I don't know how bad things are at Japan, so, you know, my daughter can go there safe and sound, no problem. You know, when we clearly have readings in Tokyo, in the water, that show that we have trace elements of this same Fukushima fallout, it just continues to flow, and there's a bunch of highly radiated areas around there and the prefectures north of there. I'm like, you know, simple, I mean, all it takes is a little bit of research. This isn't some, you know, big
So, Dave, mystery, since I have you right? on the radio and I know you're doing this research, would you share with our listeners some of that information? Because one of the things that people, A, I'd like you to share with them what's the kind of the assessment of what you know what's going on with Fukushima and Japan as a whole in terms of radioactivity. And then when you're finished, I'm actually going to ask you to recollect some places where we can send people to get information. But why don't you bring our listeners up to speed of what's happening at Fukushima and what's the radiation levels in Tokyo and other parts of Japan?
Sure. Well, I mean, when the disaster first struck in March 2011, if you're brand new to this, you know, here's the 101 version of what happened. We had the earthquake, tsunami, and the subsequent meltdowns there. The Operation Tamagotchi sailors were offshore there trying to give relief, and they're the ones who suffered the most damage, I feel. They're the ones that had the most exposure. Luckily, the wind was blowing out towards the ocean, luckily. Not for the sailors, obviously, but for the people on shore. But it doesn't matter. I mean, 65% of the country of Japan was affected by Fukushima radiation in one way or another, from Hokkaido all the way down to Tokyo. So, I mean, there you just have to know where the hotspots are. It's the same with Chernobyl. You know, there are hotspots all around Belarus, all around Finland, right? You just have to know where not to go. Now, the problem is in Japan, you know, after the initial, everybody evacuate, you know, this is a bad situation, you know, and we sent over 100,000 people away, it's like, now it's like, well, let's move everybody back. You know, we clean this area up, you know, this and that and the other thing. We have millions and millions and millions of tons of radioactive waste just sitting on the side of the road
right.
in Japan. I drive through sometime. Drive through and see all the sacks for yourself, right? Oh, they're all waiting for this, you know, interim storage facility to be built. Yeah, interim, yes, for sure. And then, you know, apparently, you know, out of sight, out of mind. They've been incinerating the whole time. The plant has been leaking in the ocean all the time. And, you know, and no matter what the Japanese government and their everything's normal narrative, which they've been pushing ever since the DPJ got ousted and Abe and his cronies got put back into power. Oh, you know, let's bring the Olympics back. That's all that matters, right? You know, that's all they care about is the do-re-mi and not the people. We still have over 70,000 people, evacuees, in Japan who are living in temporary housing.
Right.
Cracker box housing that was built to last for 2 years, and we're on year six now.
So, Dave, what is the status with that? I mean, I know that you're connected a lot with Japan because your heritage is Japanese, correct?
Correct. So, yeah, my mom is from Japan. That's correct.
Right. So you're pretty much really tuned into that. So what is the status of that? Because I had heard that those people are being forced to move back into Fukushima. Is that true or not?
Well, I'm not really sure if forced is correct. What they're doing is they're de-incentivizing a lot of people by taking away some of the support money. That TEPCO, oh, they've always been crying, oh, we're going broke. Hey, guess what, TEPCO? You guys need the corporate death penalty, okay? You need to be more than broke, okay? Because it's bad enough that, you know, you displaced, you know, tens of thousands of people who can never consciously go back home because the radiated areas that they now would have to live in, you can't raise a family there. You
right.
can't build a business there. I mean, they keep trying to, you know, force this narrative on people, and people aren't moving back. It's all fantasy that that's going to happen, right? And all this stuff, oh, the governor of Fukushima Prefecture goes to the UN, oh, we're making all these drives and blah, 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 blah. Hey, guess what, governor? Why don't you take a look at your own radiation map for Fukushima Prefecture? It is highly radiated all along that main corridor where Fukushima City is, where Koriyama City is, and people know not to let their kids outdoors for long periods of time, especially in those areas, especially where the hot spots are.
Wow. That must be so terrifying for people to, who are living in Japan, to realize that they're like on a bubble that they can't escape. I mean, that must be a terrifying event for them.
And then you have to understand, Lonnie, that the Japanese society in general, they don't like to make waves. They have been, you know, a very, you know, they're an even-keeled kind of society, right? They have an old saying that, you know, the hammer, the nail that sticks up gets hammered back down, right? So what that means is, you know, they're not about nonconformity in Japan, right? So an incredible event like this happens at Fukushima Daiichi, and your sense of normality gets thrown out the window, basically, right? So, you know, the people who left Fukushima, well, the people who stayed in Fukushima, now they have a chip on their shoulder against those people, okay? It's like, oh, you left. You know, why are you coming back here? You know, it shows that you don't have strong character. That's the Japanese mindset.
Oh,
and
wow.
Those people who left, and those people who did leave found and relocated new areas. I just read a report the other day. A kid in school got bullied and got beat up because they said, oh, well, you get money from TEPCO. You know, you're one of those Fukushima boys. So I'm like, you know, come on, man.
Wow.
This type of mindset is pervasive and is real. I mean, look at Yori Mochizuki, the homie from Fukushima Diary, right? He moved to, Central Europe.
Right.
Right? Against the better wishes of his parents. His parents said, well, are you crazy? You're not worried about, you know, this. You know, our government says it's fine. Well, he said, guess what, conservative parents? I'm concerned for my health. I'm concerned for my well-being. I'm out of here. And that's when he moved. And now he's there helping other refugees move out of Japan to Central Europe or wherever, you know, helping them get visas, because he knows that that is the reality. Just like doctors in Tokyo know that people should not be living in that city.
In Tokyo?
Yeah.
You're saying that people should not be living in Tokyo?
If you look at the dispersal map for what happened, and we have that, I've had that posted many, many times. If you look at that dispersal map, it's not just Fukushima, okay? And it's not just, you know, in that, you know, immediate area of Fukushima Prefecture. It's Gunma Prefecture. It's Chiba Prefecture. It's Ibaraki Prefecture. And like I said, areas of Hokkaido. It's like there are spots all over Japan where you've got to watch out where you're going. You got to, you know, I mean,
there's a guy I watch on YouTube, and there's no words. It's called Kiorio. I don't know how to let me see if I can look for it. But he basically, all he does, he doesn't say any words. It's just videos. He puts his Geiger, he has two Geiger counters that he mounts, and he posts them, and he goes around to different areas. And it looks like it's about 50 miles away from the nuclear power plant, maybe 75. Mm-hmm. But the radiation rates are outrageous. They go from 0.0119 to 5.35. Yeah. I think the highest I saw was 7-something.
Several magnitudes over what is considered normal, quote-unquote, background radiation, which should be 0.15. So if you're getting a reading of 5-point-something,
yeah,
and it's supposed to be 0.15, guess what? You are in a highly radioactive situation right there. And, you know, and kids are playing there. Moms are walking to the grocery store there, right? I mean, I've seen countless videos of Fukushima Prefecture, of Gunma Prefecture, and it's Geiger counter, beep, 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 beep. It's just crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. That's why, you know, in our four-step plan at Operation Save the Earth, the number two step, which nobody talks about but is super important, and it's totally against what the Japanese government is trying to do. Step two, evacuate Fukushima now. We have about a million people in Fukushima Prefecture living there, right?
Right now there's a million people?
Lower and lower. A million people. Still
in
living
the Fukushima Prefecture?
Right now. And it's like they're just suffering in silence.
I thought it was about a third of that day.
And if they have kids, they're moving them away or, you know, just getting out, you know. And for the ones that can't move away because they don't have enough money, they don't have enough support, they're stuck. Can you imagine, Lonnie, being stuck in a radioactive area?
I could.
And your government won't support you and you have no way to leave. Think about that.
I could not. That would just be complete mental anguish. That would be horrendous. Dave, why don't you take us through your four actions that you think are imperative for us to do in Operation Save the Earth?
Sure. You know, when I first started this, I knew we needed an actual plan back in 2011 because, you know, like so many other people, I didn't know how nuclear reactor worked at all. I knew nothing about the nuclear industry whatsoever before Fukushima, okay? And when it happened, I had to do a lot of catching up really quick. But I came down to four basic concepts. I was like, we have to get at these four things, because if we don't, then nothing else is going to matter. So, you know, it's the same plan as you would for any other, like if your house is on fire, right? First of all, step one, educate and safeguard. What you got to know more, do more, be more. You got to understand what the problem is, right?
Educate. Number one is educate.
Educate and safeguard, right. So if you know more about the problem, how big is the fire? You can put on the right protective fire suit, right? You can, you know, take the best care of yourself. You can say, okay, I'm not going to eat the fish. Or I'm not going to drink the milk, you know. You can take supplements to help protect your body from, you know, these deleterious effects that you're getting from these radionuclides that are out in the atmosphere, in the ocean, in your food now, right? So that step, if you take, just do that one thing. If you just take step one, everything changes. If everyone were to take step one and understand the problem more and take better care of themselves now, so much would change overnight if we just did that.
No, it's true. But if people just stopped eating dairy, imagine that. Like, what would happen? Or stopped eating fish. Imagine if people just said, I'm not going to eat fish anymore.
Well, you know, to those people like me, because I haven't had fish in years now. I used to love sushi. Salmon, one of my most favorite things on the planet. You can't get that no more, though.
Has your mother stopped eating sushi?
It's from Norway, and it's imported, and they have pink color at it. Okay, go to your local grocer sometime, folks. That's what you're getting. You're not getting that beautiful coho pink anymore because you can't get it no more. It's all gone. It got eaten by whatever, you know, is left in the Pacific Ocean. That's it, you know. So enjoy your fish now, folks. It's radioactive now, but enjoy it because in a couple more years, what fish?
We're not going to have fish like that. Those millions of fish that rolled up in the canal in Long Island today. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
There was
a
huge fish kill, and people are like, the scientists are like, it's a mystery. I'm like,
yeah, it's a mystery,
doesn't have anything
right.
to do with the tritium in the water coming out of New York City.
But oh, certainly not.
It's a mystery.
Certainly not. The pollution problem that we have in our oceans and waterways is catastrophic. Yeah. And I keep saying that Fukushima is the telephone pole that broke the camel's back in the Pacific Ocean. So, you know, we have got to really, really, you know, ramp up our awareness of the situation. That's step one. Step two, as I just talked about, evacuate Fukushima now. We still got moms and grandmas, you know, sitting in these cracker boxes. It's ridiculous. We need to support those people first and foremost. Instead of building new military bases, like, you know, we keep pushing for in Japan, oh, we need the Asia Pip and everything. Here's an idea. Why don't we turn Okinawa into a rescue and evac center?
That's a really
good
question.
How about that for an idea? How about if we open that up so that the moms and grandmas and kids who can't get away have a place to go safe?
It's already a fully built city.
Right. That's right. You know, why can't we be the good guys here in Japan? Why can't, you know, the United States be the good guy here in Japan? No, you know, we have to contain China. That's much more important. Okay, whatever.
Wow.
All right? You're throwing the kids under the bus while you're doing it, right? So we need to change our mindset. We need to adopt. And we, the United States, need to take responsibility for this step two, because the Japanese government sure ain't, and the Japanese government does what we tell them to,
mm-hmm.
straight up. That's
straight
reality,
up.
Right? So that's what we have to do. Step three is something that should have been done by now. Okay, step three is control and contain the situation at Fukushima Daiichi. Like we've been talking about, the radiation continues to leak into the Pacific Ocean every single day. The ice wall, the multi-$100 million ice wall experiment. Three guys died last year trying to put that thing together on site. Guess what? It is an abject failure. Every study continues to show that water continues to flow unabated into the Pacific Ocean. This is a complete disaster. TEPCO has failed in every step from day one to today. TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, has done it completely wrong.
I would suggest that they are doing this at the behest of the International Atomic Energy Agency. They have really followed the guidelines of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Right. And IAEA is in their charter to what? Promote nuclear energy.
Right.
It's in their charter. That's what they have to do. So do you think they're really concerned with human health and safety?
Never
no.
have been. They're
that's
the ones who created the 90% rule. Promote
nuclear energy. So,
what's step
great.
Four, Dave?
What's that?
What's step four?
Step four is the one that everyone laughed at when I first introduced it back in 2011. They're like, oh, come on, Dave. I mean, I understand how important the first three things are, but step four is never going to happen. You're crazy. Oh, yeah? Guess what? It's 2016, and step four, nuclear power is over, is definitely coming to fruition. Not just at San Onofre, not just in, you know, 20 more nuclear reactors in France because they have bad steel. I just read about that here recently. Guess what? The money guys are starting to say, you know what, this nuclear thing, maybe not such a good investment anymore. You know, our spot uranium prices just continue to sink. The stock market guys, the Wall Street guys are starting to get my message, which I have been hammering over and over and over and over for the past 5 years. Nuclear is a bad investment. Why would you want to put your money in that? When you can, like, there's going to be so many great, amazing things with energy production and conservancy and storage over the next 25 years. It's going to be revolutionary. And people are going to be able to make a lot of money by investing in that instead of, you know, investing in 70s dino tech like nuclear energy. I'm like, really? You want to spend, you know, billions of dollars and spend 10 years to build a plant that may or may not work, and then, you know, have that thing run for, you know, billions of dollars for 20, 40 years. And then, you know, for the next 64,000 years, somebody's got to watch over that, and that's more billions of dollars.
Well, it's kind of like, imagine Chuck Hindman, who I hope to have back on again, the microbes guy that we've been talking to. Imagine, his idea is that we really, if we can put microbes down on our earth and in our homes, we could really remediate the radiation. Like, the microbes are the brains of the earth, and it really could manage and reverse the negative effects of the radioactive contamination. But we need an investment of billions of dollars. So imagine if we got those billions of investors that are investing in nuclear to invest in the microbe industry and make it a worldwide billion-dollar industry. Because Fukushima's ongoing, the microbe industry is going to be ongoing.
Sure. That and, like, water purification systems. And there's so many, you know, things that can grow out of this disaster in as far as opportunity goes. Yeah, that's the thing. People don't see that. You know, it's like you mentioned before we started the show today, people don't want to hear about Fukushima. It's too big, it's too nasty, it's too scary. Well, hey guys, you know, why are you looking at it as, you know, just that? Too big, too scary. When you should be looking at the opportunities that are available to us as a result. You know, what we can do. I mean, if we really want to unite under one global banner, we could do that right now. With Fukushima, we could get a coalition of Russian scientists.
Dave, when you say that, I can
Chinese engineers and United States technology, and you could put that all together, and we could find a way to remediate the situation at Fukushima Daiichi, other than TEPCO and their little roadmap to success over the next 30 years, which has been, like I said, an abject failure from day one till today.
Well, Dave,
I think the idea of having a coalition come in there and make a difference.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I think that the idea of having the world unite under one global banner makes some people's hair stand up. They think about the one world globalist, like the, you know, that I think that is in fact partly why this has not come together, because there is a huge resistance for people to unite as a, they look at it as if it's going to be George Orwell all over again. You know what I mean? The world uniting to be a one world government. People don't want a one world government, but we do need a one world effort, because this is affecting the entire world.
Right. You know, I mean, didn't these people watch Independence Day? I mean, when the aliens attacked, what did we do? You know, the Jews and the Palestinians threw down their arms and said, okay, we need to work together. You know, everybody came together in an emergency situation to do what? The right thing. That's what we have here, an emergency situation that we need to do the right thing together on, instead of cover-up, collusion, crap, which is what we have.
Yeah.
And now, if everyone's scared of, oh, one world order, you know, kumbaya, peace, and all that other stuff, let me put it to you this way. After we get the Fukushima nightmare taken care of, where we have it kept, what we say over at Operation Save the Earth is we need a 360-degree solution. We need an egg around the entire thing so that it's not getting the atmosphere, not getting the ocean anymore. Until that happens, what are we doing? We're just piddling around, making messes, and continuing to cry when we need to really get in there and do the work. We can do that, and if you're scared about one world, here's my proposition for you. Let's do this thing. Let's get it done. And then afterwards, if you want to go on hating on each other again, be my guest. I don't care, because all that matters is this. If we don't solve the problem at Fukushima Daiichi, it is going to solve all of our problems for us.
Right. That's exactly right. And it is doing that. And that's the issue here, is like we started the show talking about how important it is for everybody to take action and be active. But I think the idea about railing against the world coming together to stop a common enemy, which is the nuclear industry, I think that's a reasonable proposition. I mean, we're not telling people how to live. We're telling people that we need to join together to save our planet, because really, we are being attacked by the nuclear industry. It's World War III is on. People say, oh, we averted World War III by not electing Clinton. Really? No, we already have World War III. It's called Fukushima Daiichi. There's more nuclear pollution in the world right now than ever was put out.
Oh, ever. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, and scientists have said, Lonnie, I'm sure you've read this, that you know, a chance of something like this happening again before 2050, there's a 50-50 chance of that. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, look at the timeline. From 1979 till today, we've had, what, major accidents, quote-unquote, that, you know, have had incredible effects on our environment and damaging effects on our future and our DNA especially, right? So, you know, the time is now. You know, this, you can't put it off into the future anymore. Oh, you know, our kids will take care of that. They'll inherit that problem later down the line, and somehow they'll figure it out. No, we have got to teach our kids now to stand against nuclear. We have got to teach them how poisonous it is. You know, the old narrative that it's clean, green, and safe. No, that's all out the window now, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, after three strikes, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima. I'm sorry, three strikes, you're out.
Well, Dave, that is exactly the argument of the pro-nukers.
Bye bye. You know, go walk off now. So.
That's the argument of the nuke liars, is that they say, look at Fukushima, look at Chernobyl, look at, nobody's died, and yet they exclude the levels. They do.
Nobody's died, really? Ms. Ayashita.
Yes. Go look at what the nuclear industry says about Fukushima. They literally, on their website, say there have been no deaths caused from Fukushima. It was all caused by the tsunami. And the other part, and this is all driven from the IAEA, who is the head of the snake on this one, is that, like, just around Three Mile Island, look at the autism rates around Three Mile Island. My sister lives around there. She has, I think... I think she had like 8 kids between her and her husband. They both had a few kids when they got married, right? So they had a bunch of kids. Out of their prospective children with 2 sets of DNAs, like my sister has her own set of kids, he had his own set of kids, and they had 2 others. Their grandchildren, out of those like 9 people, they have 3 autistic children. And they live.
That is abnormal.
Yeah, and I'm like, don't you think that's from... She goes, oh, well, we don't know what's caused the autism. I'm like, it's from living next to a nuclear... She's like, was 15 miles away from Three Mile Island most of their lives. I'm like, you're going to tell me that you don't believe that's from nuclear? She's like, well, no. Our doctors would have told us if it was. I'm like, really? That is what we have to combat, is these doctors, the MDs, who have been trained to just completely ignore it and well, we don't have the scientific evidence. That's what they tell us. We don't have the evidence to see it. The reason we don't have the evidence to see it is they're not looking. They're just
clearly
not
looking. Yeah, they don't understand the concept of Occam's razor either. The shortest point between 2 points is what, a straight line, right? What's the obvious answer?
Right.
What's the obvious answer? Look for the most obvious answer first. That's usually what it is. Don't overcomplicate it, folks. You know, I mean, for the people who have that mindset of, you know, they bought into the nuclear propaganda, hey, you know, go spin your circles. That's fine. What I'm trying to concentrate on, what our target audience is, the next generation. Okay, we need to get the next generation on board with the idea, Lonnie, that nuclear energy is old news, that it has got to go out with the buggy whip, all right? We don't need buggy whips anymore because we have cars, okay? We don't need nuclear energy anymore because we have other ways to create energy that are truly clean, green, and safe, okay? That aren't going to be, you know, things where you got to call the governor in the middle of the night, oh, hey, sorry, governor, there's been a nuclear detonation at our plant. You know, it shouldn't have to be that way. What it should be is like the governor calling Zeke down at the shack saying, hey, Zeke, the solar panel fell off. Can you go get the ratchets and put it back down for me? Okay, that's how simple it should be. Not, you know, this, you know, a mortal danger for all of us. I mean, folks, take a look at a dispersal map in your neighborhood sometimes. 40% of Americans live within a 50-mile radius of a nuclear reactor. That is real.
That's true. And in the U.S., our nuclear reactor operators do not warn the citizens when they're going to open the vents and clean their facility, which releases most of the radiation. In Europe, they give you a warning and tell you that it's happening, tell you to stay inside for 2 weeks. In the U.S., because it's a win-win situation, people will get sick. And so the medical industry, which is privatized here, which is a for-profit industry, actually goes hand in hand with the pollution that we've had going on in our country. So,
oh, yes. I'm well aware of that. I used to work in the healthcare industry. So, yeah, I could talk to you about for days about that one.
Well, I hope you do talk to us for days about that. Dave, we have 30 seconds left, and I hope that you will come back and join us on a more regular basis, because this has been quite stimulating. It's been really awesome.
My pleasure, Lonnie. It's been so much fun.
Well, thank you. And for all of you, please do go to OperationSaveTheEarth.com. And that website was Kineaiyour. I'll put the link in the site. Thanks for joining us. Put your courage feet on, you guys. We'll talk to you on Friday. Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, bye.
Gibson.